Burns, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. And I am... Hold on. Okay, sorry, again. All right. Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, and we are in the Chief Executive Officer's fabulous building in Belfast Harbour Commission, and Roy Adair is CEO and Commissioner since 2005. And Commissioner, thank you for joining us on our program.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
Tell me about, let's start with 400 years ago. What was this and how did Belfast become what it's primarily known for?
Well, 400 years ago, Belfast itself was nothing more than a little hamlet, maybe 100 people, 200 people. It had the advantage of a convenient crossing of the River Langan. The major town or city, if you like, was Carrickfergus, just a little bit up Belfast Lough. But the locals saw some advantage to being here, and they persuaded the then government in power to grant some charter rights to the city. And we got in the city what was known as a sovereign, but that means a Lord Mayor, our friend Mark Sheen, of course, today. And it also granted the citizens the right to start constructing a port. And we've grown from there, so this is our 400th birthday this year.
My God. Now, 1847, in the history of Ireland, of course, we associate that, you know, with the beginning of the famine in Ireland. 1847 was also an into the, from that port, something major had taken place at the harbour. It was the beginning.
Well, at that time, of course, as well as the tragedy, which of course was the Irish famine, you were also in the beginnings of the Industrial Revolution, and trade was starting to boom in general throughout Europe and certainly on these islands. And everywhere there was a need for that trade to be facilitated. And the way in which ports infrastructure got built in those days was quite haphazard, and there was a general idea that ports needed to be enabled to move forward, and Belfast was one of the ports that was given some liberty by the creation of what is today known as Belfast Harbour Commissioners, which, as you rightly say, happened in 1847.
And that was the beginning of was shipbuilding. When did that actually start?
Well, the shipbuilding probably happened slightly after that, and shipbuilding actually was a Scottish import in that the expertise came from Scotland. A number of enterprising shipbuilders led by William Ritchie, and actual fact, this very building we sit in is known for him. It's called the William Ritchie Building. And he came along and encouraged my predecessors to create some facilities for him. And he started to build ships, actually literally right outside this window.
Yes, incredible. And Harlan and Wolff, again, very much associated with Belfast and with massive employment. Their role, when did they start?
Well, again, what you find in that period of the mid-1800s, Belfast actually is the furthest thing from a natural port you might imagine. It's very difficult for all of us when we look around us and see this thing, which we always assume has always been there. But this port has been made out of very adverse conditions, in the sense that Belfast is very unnatural as a port. If you go back far enough, you'll find that at low water, it was only 28 inches deep. And out the window at the River Lagan, it was meandered, and it was built on sleets, Belfast sleets, horrible muddy stuff. And the reason that Harland and Wolff opportunities arose is in order to make the port more navigable. And we started to dig that sleet out, a lot of it with bare hands. There's some fabulous photographs
of
people
indeed.
Literally digging mud and putting on the wheelbarrows and getting it ashore. And it had to be put somewhere. So in actual fact, we ended
Imagine day one with the wheelbarrow.
Absolutely.
Heading into a project.
That's right. That's how it was done. It was manpower. And from that, we created a lot of land. We currently own about 2,000 acres of land and about 1,000 acres of water. Practically all of that has been made from the sea. So this our harbour estate, as it's known, is man-made. It's been created. So everything you see around you is actually quite artificial. And Harland and Wolff, the land that was there, which was originally known as Dargan's Island, that was the man who created the first cut, and latterly was named after Queen Victoria, Queen's Island. And of course, that Queen's Island is famous for where Harland and Wolff came. So the land came first, and then Harland and Wolff saw an opportunity to create a shipyard, and we, the commissioners, created what was necessary. We had to build the infrastructure for them. We had to build the docks for them. We had to build the wharfs for them. And from there grew a fabulous industry.
We'd hardly, other than seeing very visibly the structures and the cranes used by Harland and Wolff, as we see Belfast today and see great number of cruise ships of every level, coming into Belfast. This is it's hard to imagine that this was a capital industrial area until quite recently.
Well, of course, Harland and Wolff are still working away quite nicely in the background and are themselves hugely successful. They have recast themselves in the renewables field, and they are using their magnificent cranes to very good purpose for that. And they've been doing very nicely. They're growing. They're employing more people. So Harland and Wolff actually haven't quite gone away. And, of course, they still retain some of their expertise, and they get some nice projects for offshore work. So they're still there, and they're still strong and very valuable customer for us. So we're very delighted that they have gone through some renaissance. But in terms of the cruise ships, yes, we've been working on it very hard for quite a long time, and it's very encouraging to see the growth in the cruise ships that we've managed to produce. So much so that we actually are literally next week about to cut the sod on a new £7 million, $10 million cruise ship facility, which will be the first cruise ship facility, dedicated facility in Ireland, which will make life so much easier for our friends that come on the cruise ships and the lines.
And I would assume that the current traffic in terms of cruise ships, they're more than aware that, they're in pecking order will be of great value. How long is this project going
to
take?
Oh, well, we hope to have it open for the middle of next season. So we hope to have the first cruise ships using it certainly by the summer next year. And we're going to go as fast as we possibly can.
Now, this is considered to be the principal maritime port for the island of Ireland. Is that... is that so? Is it still so?
Well, I would say one of the principal, the big ports would be ourselves, Dublin, Cork would be the big three. Shannon Foyne's across in Limerick do a decent amount of trade as well, but they're a very specialised port given where they are and what they need to move in and move out. The biggest port is Dublin, and we come second behind Dublin. And between Dublin and Belfast, you have over 50% of all the throughput from Ireland through those two ports.
Is there a history of emigration from this area and from these ports?
Well, yes. I mean, if you go back, you asked me questions there about the 1800s. Of course, the first waves of immigration were the Scots-Irish, Ulster Scots, dissenters who didn't quite like the way they were being treated, religious freedom. So there was always traffic going out of Belfast before probably there was significant traffic going out of Dublin, and it was mostly people going and settling in Virginia and Kentucky. If you go before that all took off. And if you actually take my name Adair and go and have a look, you'll find a lot of Adairs in around Kentucky and the Nashville area. Some of my predecessors made that trip and became part very much of the American story.
What is generally, now I know we have the cruise ships, and we also acknowledge that shipbuilding as we knew it has gone on to China, the Far East. What trade and what in terms of trade do you actually take place from here?
Well, if you actually take the value of the goods that come in and out of the port every year, it's about 25 billion sterling, which is obviously about $35 billion worth of goods flowing out of the port. That's the incoming raw materials, perhaps the steel, to make things like dump trucks or grading systems or buses. We've got a fabulous bus industry.
Right. And is it all in this area?
Well, no, we're serving our hinterland, of course, stretches as far as Cork. My actual fact, if you read the Cork Examiner, you will be reading it on paper that came via Belfast, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't read that in the Cork Examiner. And believe me, I won't be telling anybody what you said, but that's true. I mean, we draw
our help from everywhere. The buses are made in Ballymena, a company called Wright Bus, fabulous company.
Yes.
And they're selling the buses all over the world. I've got a huge project for London, huge project for Hong Kong, trying to break into the North American market, I know. So we've got all different kinds of industry. We've got an aerospace industry sitting here in terms of Bombardier, again, Canadian-owned company. So all of those folks need
Microsoft.
But they need to bring stuff in, and they make stuff, and they take it back out again. And Belfast as a port, and indeed Northern Ireland, I kind of believe the unsung hero is the agri-food business. And I think that's true for the island as a whole.
Absolutely.
Just because we're familiar with the cigarettes that are produced or the whiskey that's produced, we take it for granted. But those are phenomenal export stories and export opportunities for all of the island. And they do take some shifting, and we've got a really great base. And that's through in the foodstuffs. We've got a huge food production industry. Moy Park would be a huge company based in Portadown and Dungannon, which they've got to get their materials in and out again. In actual fact, one of the single biggest things that comes through the port are the grains that are required to feed the beasts. I sometimes joke and say that they're in the business of turning carbohydrate into protein. We bring in the carbohydrate in the form of grain, and we send out protein in the form of chicken.
Fantastic. Tell us about investment and the significance of investment, not only to Belfast, but to Northern Ireland.
In general or for the port?
In general.
I have the privilege of being a board member with Invest Northern Ireland, and of course that is the lead organization that is challenged with finding ways of trading more, so helping the companies that are here sell their products and wares across the world.
As a matter of fact, we just met Gary Hanley over at City Hall, there with the Lord Mayor, and we were of the opinion that this was not just a social visit. We had to get out of there, let him do a bit of business.
Well, indeed, Gary is a man for doing business, and no finer man. And I think myself and my fellow board members are immensely grateful that we've had Gary on board and doing such a great job for quite a number of years now. He and we punch way above our weight. We get more than you might expect given the size of the opportunity. So we're quite pleased in terms of how well we penetrate that space.
Now, investment into port, investment into this particular area. Are there any recognizable American companies, investment companies?
Well, in terms of the port, there would be, as you say, we've got a Microsoft presence. The biggie, probably North American's Bombardier, we've mentioned.
Yes.
More recognizable from a New York point of view, I guess, would be City. But we've got Dow Chemical here as well. So we've got quite a number of the big heavy hitters.
Is there, we have noticed, and I think anybody who has come to Belfast in the last few years, I've noticed such an amazing difference. It would appear that there's a major investment in the city itself, primarily, and great buzz, which was not here for a number of years.
Well, I think I think that when we had our, might I call them, difficulties, certainly that you couldn't say that was the biggest positive for business that you could possibly have. But we have moved into a new era. We've got people working together, and they clearly do work together. You only have to look at visits made by the First and Deputy First Minister to the United States, and I've had the privilege to be along with some of those to see how that partnership does work. I think that changes confidence levels, and it makes things easier, and you're not running uphill anymore. We're running on a flat place, or maybe downhill slightly. We've got so many things going for us, and we want to do more of that. I mean, one of my little side activities is I also have the privilege of chairing an organization called Northern Irish Connections, and it's our attempt to make better connections with the diaspora all across the world, but most particularly in North America. And in actual fact, we are we're having our inaugural event in New York on the 5th of September. We are taking part in the festivities associated with the Lyric Theatre from Belfast coming
Indeed,
putting on its production of Brendan at the Chelsea. And that's an opportunity to get that message out as well. So there's a lot of things happening.
Now, in your spare time, you have been involved in non-executive positions, range of organizations, including, for instance, Prince's Trust. What is that?
Well, Prince Charles, I guess, in a United Kingdom sense, has always been very keen not on just sponsoring and being the patron of regular charities. He has set out to create a couple of his own, and the two notable ones, there's more than two, but the two best known are Business in the Community, which I have the privilege of chairing locally, and Prince's Trust. And the Prince's Trust specifically targets at underprivileged younger people and tries to assist their development. So people who haven't had the leg up, the idea is that the Prince's Trust gives a leg up, or maybe people who have found themselves in difficulty and have got onto the wrong side of the law.
Mm-hmm.
How can we build a future for young offenders, etc.? So it's really trying to take away some of the weight that those young folks carry around with them. And it makes a huge difference. And again, honored, privileged, and delighted to be able to put some of my efforts into that.
And, of course, again, this is non-denominational.
Oh, absolutely. Well, everything in Belfast, there's no such thing as
denominational. And I think that's, we keep looking to see.
I think we're way past that. I mean, that's yesterday's news. I don't think, I couldn't tell you anyone of note who even thinks that way. It's not, they don't even secretly harbor that. They just don't.
Well, for the odd time that there is a rumble here, we definitely get to see it and hear about it all around the world. Mm. The exception being much more newsworthy than the rule. But for anybody who's visited here, or for those who have, invested in Belfast, it would be very hard for them, to get the message across to those who still are only visiting Belfast for the first time.
Well,
I think we
can't say that there are zero issues. There's no society with zero issues. I think a lot of our societal issues reflect Western civilization, and we certainly have got people who are a bit disgruntled and who would perhaps, some of them perhaps would even want to put the clock back.
Sure.
But I personally don't believe there are a lot of those folks. And I would say that what we have are small hiccups. We don't have a phenomenal indigestion, or we don't have something deeply going wrong. And the politicians, I think, are quite good at not trying to deny those people their voice. We shouldn't. It's a democracy. People are allowed to say what they think. And I am very confident that those matters are not something that are a huge disruptor to life in the city. And most of it's very contained. If you ever happen to visit here when one of what are called hiccups occur, you're talking about half of a football field or something is the size of what the problem might be.
Yeah.
And, of course, when you see it on television, shot from dramatic angles, you guys are in the news business, so I don't need to inform you. That, but realistically speaking, life...
And if you're going to take a swipe at it, you would not hear any of that on our program.
I'm sure not. But,
yes.
I think those things are exaggerated.
One of the areas that we are, seeing a massive change in, and that is that Belfast now has become the hub of tourism, not just from North America, but everywhere you go, everywhere you look, try to find a hotel room in Belfast, particularly in the summertime. This is a relatively new phenomenon.
Well, I think it's been identified for a number of years that our penetration into the tourism market has got some roads to go. I'm not an expert in tourism, although I'm taking interest in it. And I think we would normally expect maybe 7% of our GDP to be coming from tourism.
Right.
I think in the doldrums it might have been down to 2.5%, and it's now north of 4%. But there's headroom there, and it's like any other any other business process, you've got to figure out, have you got the right product? And then you've got to promote the hell out of it.
Yes.
And I think the surge that we're seeing is those two things coming together incredibly successfully. The government and its agencies, principally the Northern Ireland Tourist Board, have worked incredibly hard with partners to find ways of coming up with better product. We've been part of that. And the second thing is they've been working very hard together with Tourism Ireland, which of course tries to do this for the entire island, very strenuously, and that's making a difference. So one of the reasons you've got the success, and why you mentioned cruise ships earlier on, is that the product's here. People get off a cruise ship, there's lots for them to do. In actual fact, so much that we hope they come back, because it's very hard to actually get to see everything you might want to see in a single day. It's impossible. And certainly the Titanic Belfast, our tribute to what was a tragedy, of course, has done phenomenally well.
The commissioners
committed £20 million, $30 million to the project. And we did that because we wanted to get Belfast more clearly on the map. And tourism, is my view, isn't simply good just because it brings tourist dollars. That's fantastic. But it also gives you a more general marketing platform to get other messages out.
Yeah.
And the creation of what we refer to as Destination Belfast has been critical to a lot of success.
Okay. Thank you for taking the time. This has got to be for those who would be privileged, as we are, to be in Roy Adair, Chief Executive Officer of Belfast Harbour, and the Commissioners of Belfast Harbour. This has to be one of the most amazing sites here on the harbour.
You're incredibly generous and kind, man. Thank you.
Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.